Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another Coffee with Kim episode. So today I have another special guest, Stacey Garland. So I know Stacey from the bodybuilding scene. So I'm really looking forward to talking to her and getting her to share her story with you guys, because Stacey, like myself, has done bodybuilding and has also experienced what it's like to have an unhealthy relationship with food and your body. So that was one of the reasons why I brought Stacey on. So she's going to be sharing some of her story with you. But the other cool thing about Stacey is actually she's now a body image coach. And she also has a master's in health psychology. So not only can she share her own journey, but she can also share some of her wisdom through the work that she now does. So firstly, welcome, Stacey. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited for this conversation because I think we have very similar backgrounds and a very similar ethos to body image and food now, which is really cool to see.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly why I wanted to bring you on. Okay, so let's start by, Stace, I'd really love to hear everybody's body image and relationship with food journey starts somewhere. So I really know you from, like I say, from the bodybuilding scene, and I only really met you when you were already in that. So it'd be really cool for me to hear and for the ladies to hear, when did your journey really start? Like, who was Stacey before bodybuilding? When did you have a good relationship with food? I'll get you to give us the background.
Cool. So I, growing up, had absolutely no idea about body image, weight loss, food. I was really active growing up. So I played a lot of hockey and touch rugby, quite competitive levels. And then I went away to Dunedin for university and stopped playing all of the sport. And obviously with uni, started drinking and eating all of the things. And it wasn't until the end of my first year of university, when I had moved away from home, that I went on to put a pair of shorts, because it was coming into summer. I went on to put a pair of shorts on and I didn't get past my thighs. And that was the first time that I had ever thought about gaining weight, losing weight, anything about like my body or food. And that was like a really switched moment for me. So I went deep dived into the diet world because I was appalled that I'd put on so much weight, and I hadn't actually realized that I'd put on weight because body image just wasn't something that I thought about. I never looked at my body and thought any negative things. It was just my body. And so from that, when I came home for the summer, all I did was research about diets, focus on exercise. I was exercising up to 4 hours a day, really trying to lose this weight. And it became just an obsession for me. So I would start weighing all my foods. I'd get up in the morning and go for a walk and then a run and then gym session. And my whole day just revolved around what I was eating and exercise. And that went on probably for about 2 years. Obviously, I wasn't exercising every day for 4 days, but it was quite excessive. And I lost the weight very quickly, but I had like that dopamine hit from people saying, oh my gosh, you look so good. You've lost weight. Your body's amazing. It just became an obsession. So from there, for about 2 to 3 years, I went back to university, obviously, and I kept up with, I was actually following bodybuilding diets and exercise regimes that I found on the internet, because that's where all of my research, so-called research, came from. And I thought that these women lived their lives like that. And I thought that was their every single day diet and all of their exercise throughout the year, when in reality, it was their comp prep diet. And I didn't know that. There was nothing about that on the internet. And so I started to adopt this bodybuilding lifestyle without actually doing a competition. And then my body started to reflect that as well. And then people in the gym started saying certain things around, oh, you should do a competition, or have you looked at bodybuilding? Because I was kind of doing it anyway. And then I decided to do a competition, and it became a real big change in language from people saying, you're really skinny. And, you know, I guess now bodybuilding gave me an outlet and a reason why I was dieting and a reason why I was able to go to the gym for 2 hours, because now I had a goal attached to it. And so the language and feedback around that from myself and other people were like, oh my gosh, you're so dedicated. I'm so impressed that you can do this. And so it was kind of just that positive reinforcement to continue going. So in 2014, I did 3 bodybuilding competitions and I qualified for the nationals for the following year. And this by this time I'd been dieting and over-exercising for about 5 or 6 years. And at the end of that year, I totally binged. I hadn't had sugar for like 8 months. I hadn't had anything off plan. And I actually started to think about how unhealthy my body was and how unhealthy my mind was. And I was really interested to see like physically what that was doing to me. So I went to an endocrinologist and she basically told me that I had osteopenia in my spine. My hormonal profile looked like I was in menopause. I was 23 years old. She said if I didn't actually start to work on my health and get my period back, I probably wouldn't be able to have children. I was at risk of some cancers and just all of these things came up and it really shocked me. And so that was the pivotal point for me where I realized that if I didn't make a change now, I'm really setting myself up and future Stacey up for a lot of health issues. And I really got into the sport and got into wanting to be healthy and smaller, I guess, because I was focused on health and I was actually doing everything but being healthy. So yeah, that's the journey from up until when I decided that I wanted to focus on actual health and recovery.
Yeah, gotcha. So you brought up some, I think, some really powerful points here, and these have already come up in some of the other conversations that I've had with women around the relationship with food. Firstly, there usually is some sort of trigger, isn't it? So for you, it was like putting on those shorts and then feeling like, okay, this is a problem, and then deciding I need to change something. It's sometimes not just that, right? It could be anything. I've also heard women, all it can take is a guy to say, I think your thighs are big, or you hear something. So it's crazy, right? How just something, it's crazy how something, so it seems small, can have such a massive cascade effect. And I think a lot of women listening to this can probably relate to that. And actually those of you who are listening, I think it is kind of helpful sometimes to think back to when that moment was. And you've also brought up the fact that it then gets worse when we get the positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
So this is also seems to be a trend when you start losing weight or you're getting fitter. It sounds like you were getting a lot of positive reinforcement. And did you say that was from people at the gym? Was it from like parents and family and friends as well?
My family were quite concerned about me, so they didn't ever say anything around, and in fact if they said anything it would be the opposite, in that you probably need to eat more and maybe you shouldn't go to the gym. But you know, my friends, probably my wider family, so you know, not my immediate family, and people on social media, I was quite open about. I started to document my journey on social media, and so it was from people that I didn't know. And I didn't even realize, it's not really until looking back and you kind of put all these things together that you realize like what is happening. But these comments from people just really deepened my drive. Like, I'm a very driven person. I'm very motivated on a goal. And these comments about how good I was being or how driven I was or how incredible it was just like lit that fire even more. And so it came from all angles. There were also negative comments about people, you know, I'd be out, people would yell at me that I need to eat a pie, or, you know, saying these negative things. But in my mind at that point in time was, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it was like another like dopamine hit of like, oh, that means that I'm skinny, or that means I'm small enough. And so it was coming from all angles. And yeah, it was, I mean, now I look back and I'm like, first of all, you know, how can people comment on my body and think that's okay? But also about the dedication and the motivation that I have, which I got a lot of pride from, because I'm a very dedicated and motivated person. That was just in a very unhealthy avenue at that point.
Yeah. And again, such a powerful point, because this is something that does, I think actually I can resonate with that. I think that was part of the drive to keep going, to get leaner. You associate it with dedication and working hard, and then that almost boosts your self-confidence and self-esteem in some ways. But at the same time, it's also diminishing your self-worth and your self-esteem at the same time too. So again, I know a lot of girls can resonate with that, and it's a good important thing to perhaps bring up and challenge, right? Is why are we associating a certain weight, shape and size with with dedication.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's something that I speak a lot about with my clients as well, is that we get in so much from our conditioning and from our beliefs and, you know, everything that we've learned up until this point. If we don't challenge that, it's going to continue. And we place as a society so much value on what someone looks like, whether it's their body shape, their size, you know, whether they're male, female. There's so much value that we place non-consciously on what people look like. And so when we're getting compliments on our body and we're getting compliments of looking so great, it's just a human nature to enjoy that and to soak that in and to want more of that. So you continue going. So something that I work a lot with, and I have worked a lot with myself on, is focusing on that drive and dedication into other avenues, and to actually focus on the person that I wanted to be and how I wanted to make people feel, and I guess other areas of my life that gave me happiness. So when I decided to go down the recovery route, I didn't automatically flick a switch in my head and be like, okay, cool, I'm not going to focus on my body. Like, it was a conscious decision for me, and it was really hard. There were times, like, I knew I had to gain weight. I knew I had to really challenge all of these things that I'd been doing for the past few years, and it wasn't easy, but I knew that if I continued down that same path, that I would eventually have all of these health problems and I would really regret not making that decision. And so I really had to challenge myself and what it actually meant for me to be happy. And the lifestyle that I was living, in terms of obsessing about my body, although I might have had a body that I liked, really was making me miserable. I was a horrible person. I honestly, because I was so, like, I had diet brain all the time, I had no energy, I was so irritable because it was just like the world was out to get me because I wasn't allowed to eat certain foods, but I was doing it all to myself. And so when I actually realized that this is a choice that I'm making and I can make another choice, slowly over time it became a lot better, and I realized that my body was a part of who I was, but it wasn't who I am, and the people around me actually love me more when I'm happy and I'm vibrant and I'm able to do things with them and not just focusing on the gym, and a body is a byproduct of that. So it was this huge journey, and it didn't automatically just shift when I decided that I wanted to focus on it. It was like a conscious decision every single day. There was still that voice in the back of my head that said, don't eat that, or go to the gym, or like, let's kill yourself in this gym session. But I had to really quieten that voice down and just focus on what was important to me at that point in time, which was actually getting healthy and fixing my body image and not continuing on the path that I'd been on.
And how long realistically, like, did that take?
To actually start to feel more confident in my body. Like, there were obviously days that were better than others. I'm going to say around 6 to 12 months. It took me about 6 months to 8 months to get my period back. So through that time, I lost my period. To actually feel really confident in my body probably took about, honestly, around a year. And I was still in a bigger body then. I moved countries. So I'm not saying anyone who needs to do this needs to move countries, but I got myself out of the environment that I was in, where I was bodybuilding Stacey or gym obsessed Stacey. And I started associating myself with people who weren't just about the gym and who had other things going on in their lives. And that really helped me break out of that cycle, because environment is such an important impact, has such a big impact on like the way that you think and what is normalized in your life. And if I stayed in a gym environment, like, that would always be normal for me. And then so I took myself out of that environment. And it just so happened to coincide with a move to Melbourne. And so there I could actually be anyone that I wanted to be. And people didn't know me as that gym Stacey. And so I was in this bigger body, which bigger body to compared to when I had disordered eating. I was in this bigger body, and I knew that no one had this expectation of me to look a certain way. So I felt like really liberated and free and able to just be whoever I wanted to be. And that was like a real big turning point for me, because I knew that I can literally do whatever I want. I can eat whatever I want and people aren't going to say anything. Because that was a big thing for me, is when I tried to change, is that, you know, I'd go out and actually eat something off the menu and people would say, oh, you're actually eating that. And it was, you know, this constant reminder. And so when I took myself out of that environment, or I said things to people, like, can you please not comment on what I'm eating? I'm going on this journey, and it's really important for me that we don't comment on my food. It really helped. So for anyone that is going through that, setting boundaries, I think it's really important, because not everyone understands that if you're coming from a background of disordered eating or an eating disorder, tiny comments about, oh, you're eating that, or, oh, I didn't expect you to go back for seconds, can have such a big impact on, like, you can ruminate on that for so long, and you can feel really guilty about eating this sort of food. Yeah. So I set really strong boundaries with people around me and said, hey, like, I understand I'm going to be doing some different behaviors that might not be in line with what you're used to, but it's really important that you don't bring that up, because that is going to play on my mind. So I need your support in that. And actually giving people guidance on how they can support you through these certain times, and whether that be boundaries or just is sharing your journey, helps them as well, because they don't know how to react and they don't know how to support you. So actually saying these sorts of things and setting those boundaries helps you, and it helps them be in a better place as well.
Yes, absolutely. Because like you say, is if you're, it's not easy, right? You know, we make these decisions that we want to change, and we're like, okay, I want to change my identity. That's hard. And it's like you say, it's every day, it's making that conscious decision. I want to be someone different. I don't want to be this version of myself anymore. I don't want to be known as this. And like you say, as soon as you're eating something and somebody comments and they're like, oh, but this isn't you, it's like, but I'm trying to be a different version of me. Just let me do my thing. And when people comment, you can kind of second guess yourself a little bit, and you just have to put that much effort into it, right? Yeah. So I think that's really cool that you were able to feel confident, like, speaking up to the people in your life. And I hope that the women who are listening to this can kind of be inspired by that. And, you know, it is really hard, and doing it on your own is really hard. So if you're not working with a coach or somebody, at the least we can do, right, is actually speak up and get that support from our family. So thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. Okay. So on that, when you think back, how did this phase of your life impact, like, all the other areas of your life? So let's look at relationships. So I know a lot of the girls that I've worked with who have boyfriends, they find that it has actually impacted their romantic relationships. Did you ever go through disordered eating or the body image bodybuilding phase with a boyfriend?
I didn't. So I didn't have, like, I saw different people, I dated throughout that time, but and I see the same with people that I work with. It really changes their relationships, and it did change my relationships with the people around me. So although it wasn't necessarily a romantic relationship, I also didn't have a romantic relationship at that time, because I had absolutely no sex drive. I didn't care at all about being with someone. I had no energy to give anyone else. I hardly had energy to give myself. So I'm kind of thankful that I didn't have a relationship at that point in time, because it would have been just another stress or something else that was probably falling apart in my life. But I really neglected friendships and my relationship with my family, and I guess also my relationship with myself. But I didn't really have a partner throughout that time. Although with my friendships, they've definitely noticed, and I talk to my friends sometimes about it now, is they definitely notice a change where I was a shell of the person who I was. I wasn't, you know, vibrant and chatty and didn't have energy, and I was just always, like, in a little bit of a gloomy state. And I still thank them now, like, thank you so much for still being there and still being my friend, because I look back and I really just, like, I wasn't a bad person. But, you know, when you have when you're dieting for so long, you have your body is on energy reserve. So you have so little energy. You're not the same person. I wasn't, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I wasn't the same person. And especially I was also doing my master's at that point in time. And luckily I really loved what I was studying. It didn't really feel like work, but I know that I probably could have done better when I was writing my thesis, because I just didn't have the brain power to really focus on it. So there were a lot of things that were really impacted throughout that time. Relationship probably wasn't one as much.
Well, yeah, especially if you weren't in a romantic relationship, obviously you didn't have to deal with that. But just from what you've even shared, you know, like you said, you had no sex drive, you had no energy. So if you had been in a relationship, no doubt that would have been a challenge. And I think that is what I hear. It's the energy. It's where your mind is at, right? It's harder to be present in social occasions. I think I can relate to what you're saying. In friends groups, you might go to a restaurant or something, right? And everybody seems to just be ordering food freely and focusing on the conversations. Whereas when you're going through that phase, you're not enjoying it, right? Because you're just constantly stressing about what am I eating? What's this going to do to my body? Yep. Did you struggle with the social occasions as well?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Biggest stress ever.
So much, which is... Now I'm such a foodie and I absolutely yes. love eating yeah. out, and like I seriously wouldn't even care less about calories or whatever. I really just listened to my body. But at that point in time, it was such a stress, and I made it about other people. Like I was a little bit resentful that people could go out and eat what they wanted and not care, or order whatever they wanted from the menu, because here I was like looking at the menu and studying it and being like, okay, so how many calories do I think is in that, and what can I eat that has the most protein and less carbs, or whatever my diet was at the time. Or I would eat beforehand and say that I'd already eaten, and I'd go and have like a Coke Zero or something. And I'm also gluten intolerant. And so I often, and this was around about a time where not many people knew what gluten was, so I would often actually use that to my advantage and say, well, oh, I can't have that, or I can't have this because it's got gluten in it. And people didn't know at that point in time. This is, nearly 10 years ago. Nearly 10 years ago. So I would say that I can't have that because it's got gluten in it, when it doesn't. I just didn't want to have that sort of meal. So it was such a stress. Anytime I went out, I had to know where I was going. So I would look at the menu beforehand so I could kind of pre-plan or prepare myself. Or I would look around, I would suggest a place so it had something that I could eat. And even my like language around food would always be like, oh no, I can't have that, or I couldn't eat that, or I'm not allowed that. Like it was something, this force imposed on me, when really it was, you know, it was my own decision. But social occasions caused me so much anxiety. If it was at someone's house, I would take like my own Tupperware and be eating that. And it was also a focal point of conversation, because a lot of people would also say, like, so dedicated for doing that. So
so you had this, I'm curious to now, you like, you thinking back to it, was it really just this desire to fulfill this dedication image? Or did it also then turn into, was it also a fear of weight gain? Like, did you have multiple things going on, or was it yeah. very much, was it very much this, if I need to be dedicated, and that was your main driver?
No, it was very much a fear of weight gain. So I was so anxious about having anything off plan in case I gained like a tiny bit of fat, or especially when I was prepping for bodybuilding, I didn't eat like one single gram of oat off plan, because I just needed to be, I had that like perfectionism mindset, but I was also so terrified that if I ate anything off, I would have this massive blowout, or I would, gain all of this weight, because I just didn't have any trust with my body. And I thought that I was only valued if I looked a certain way, and if I had my abs and, had striations in my shoulders and had this perfect little body. And so I tied so much of my worth like that to that. So I was petrified that if I went off that, I would gain weight, and therefore I wouldn't be worthy, or I wouldn't be attractive, or I don't even know what sort of thing I was trying to find at that point in time. But the fear of weight gain was so real, and caused me a lot of anxiety.
Mm. And did that happen from the beginning? Because you said the initial sort of triggers were, I guess it was body image, wasn't it? Putting the shorts on and then getting the compliments. So it kind of sounds like it all kind of did link into one, even quite yeah. early on.
Yeah. I think I never wanted to feel what I felt at that point in time when I put those shorts on again. And I felt like kind of disgust in myself that I'd let myself get to that point without even realizing. So this whole time, and this is probably not subconsciously, that I was just really trying to avoid that feeling again. And you know, now looking back, there's nothing wrong with weight gain. I moved cities, and I was living this whole different life. And of course your body is going to change if you have a different lifestyle. But yeah, there was this intense fear of weight gain. And then also that positive reinforcement from other people kind of just kept me on that path.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it is just reality that we have these different parts to us, right? I know you did a bit of NLP, so you'll understand the whole parts thing. And we do have these, like the high achiever, the you know, that work hard part of us, and that really benefits us in some areas of life, right? Like that's that part of you that helps you create a successful business, or you know, passes an exam with like high grades. And so, what can be challenging is, we can't just ditch that part altogether, right? Because that is still part of you. So you've obviously had to, over time, figure out how to still keep that high achiever drive part, but not let it flow into things like your food and your body image. So is that kind of where you're at now? Do you feel like you've got a good balance there? Or is it something
that you're still- I think when I first started my like recovery journey, I channeled that, and I even said to myself, I'm going to be the best person at recovering, or I'm going to use that and channel that into fixing my body image and healing my relationship with food. So it became this this really dark place, or it got me into all of these troubles, but it was also the thing that got me out. And so anytime that I had any questions about you know, wanting to go back to diet or not wanting to put on weight, that drive and determination continued me forward, because I knew how important it was to heal myself and heal my relationship with food and my body. Now, yes, I'm dedicated and I'm driven, but I'm a lot more surrendered and at peace, and I don't feel like I always have to be performing or always have to be doing something. And so when I am focused on something, yes, I'm driven and dedicated, but it's also not the thing that defines me anymore. And I really make sure that I take time to enjoy life and have fun and like be present with people, and am not always trying to achieve a goal, because I realize that constant focus of trying to achieve, and I see it a lot in my clients, is that perfectionism and that drive and feeling like they always have to be doing something to be worthy or to feel like they're, you know, actually getting anywhere in life, can actually be really detrimental to being able to enjoy yourself. And so I'm really conscious now of actually being present, and I bring a lot of meditation and yoga, and I'd go on a lot of walks and go on walks without stimulation. So I'm actually able to be with myself without having to do something and tying my worth to an outcome. And I think throughout this whole journey, and this is probably something that I've only really been able to really harness and learn properly in the past like 12 months, is just surrender and allow yourself to be without that criticism and be compassionate to yourself. Because now that I've done that, I am okay with not always performing or not always achieving, and that actually allows me to show up so much more, because when I do something, it's because I'm really passionate about it and I really want to do it, and I have so much more energy and focus to give, because I'm allowing myself to like be in other areas. That went on a massive tangent, but
yeah. No, that was so beautifully put. And I think that is just so relatable. And the reality is, we know that women who have this like perfectionist side, this high achiever side, tend to be at even higher risk of falling into disordered eating, because they develop that all or nothing mentality, you know, that we've both developed, whether it's all or nothing in terms of all restriction, or then you fall to the other extreme. Like if you have one thing wrong, it's like stuff that the whole day's ruined, and may as well binge. It is that kind of like perfectionist mindset. And it sounds like you have gone on this beautiful journey of not getting angry at that perfection and high achiever part of you and trying to get rid of it, but actually seeing that as that can be helpful, and channeling that into something that was going to help you. And I think Jess, one of the other girls that I've interviewed, she did the same thing. I remember one of her ways of overcoming anorexia was channeling some of that drive into like being the best dancer, like shifting your focus away from like food and body image into something that, I don't know, that's more positive. And so it's really cool to hear similarities, I think, in people's journeys in terms of how they recover, because hopefully people listening will start to see that there's a trend. Yeah. So you've got like shifting that energy, but then also you making sure that you're not looking at your self-worth and through just one lens, and seeing your identity as just the high achiever part, but welcoming in all these other parts, like you say, like being happy and present around your friends, you know, and you valuing that. Yeah. Sounds like that's like a value that's become, would you say, a lot stronger in the last few years for you?
Yeah, I think it's also as I've gotten older, like tying less success to what I have and what I'm doing to the people around me and to actually how I feel and live my life. I think there's this huge desire to appear like your life looks a certain way, and then you'd speak to people who have everything they thought they wanted to have, and there's still that sort of emptiness. So I focus on myself first, and those things will come rather than looking externally and hoping it's going to fix my internal feelings. And so that is also a part of feeling surrendered, is not comparing yourself. And that is huge in not just body image, but in so many other aspects of your life. Like, I'm about to turn 30 and I have friends who are married and children and have the houses and everything. And that's just not my journey right now. You know, and being able to actually feel into what feels right for me and not compare to myself to other people in terms of like materialistic things or what they have or their bodies, it all like feeds into each other, and it's all very, very connected. So I think being able to focus on yourself and how you feel, that came from my body image journey, because I started to actually not look for external validation and really just focus on my body. And I'm so in tune with my body now in a way that I've never been. Like, it's taken me 30 years to get here, and I can't believe it's not something that we're not taught at school or taught, you know, throughout our lives. But actually being connected with self and intuition is like, has changed my life.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, that comparison, man, it's hard not to do though, isn't it? It's almost like we are probably somewhat wired to naturally compare. I mean, we really have to catch ourselves out when we do it. I love this word surrender. Like, when you say that, I just want to like take a breath. Yeah, I think you're going to use that. It's a really, really nice word. And like you say, you don't know what somebody's going through. And we can even think back to when you and I were doing bodybuilding and we were posting up on our Instagrams of like our abs and stuff. Yeah. Like, cringe. Oh my goodness. Yeah. We look back at those. I cringe because I know how many girls back then would have been looking at us and thinking, oh, I'll be so happy when I look like that, then I'll be happy. And they just have not, you know, back then we weren't sharing the loss of life, you know, that we were experiencing. I think I even was jealous of you at one point. It was like, oh, she hit like 8% body fat. And I was like, yeah. Oh my God, I'm so behind in my prep. I need to like get leaner. And I was like freaking out. And just because it's interesting, right? There's this belief out there that our smallest, leanest self will end up being, you know, the happiest version of you. When you look at your journey, you know, when was it, you know, was the smallest, leanest version of you the happiest version of you?
Definitely not. And I think you bring up an important point, is I'll be happy when, and that continues to shift. Like, there's this thing called the hedonic treadmill, which is essentially you set a goal, you reach the goal, you're happy for a month, and then that becomes a new baseline. And so then you're on to the next thing. And it's just this constant hamster wheel. So if you're always on this treadmill, you're always thinking, oh, I'll be happy when I have the abs or when I hit that goal weight. And a lot of the women that I work with, they have either lost a lot of weight or they've gained a lot of weight and they're looking back at themselves thinking, oh, why wasn't I just happy then? And I work with some older women who are in this phase of, you know, they're getting older and they're saying like, oh shit, why wasn't I just happy when I was 20? Or why wasn't I just happy when I was 30? And now that I'm getting 50, why can't I just like my 40-year-old body? And it's like this constant, like, I will be happy when, but if you actually look back, and if you appreciate yourself right now in 10 years, you would look back and say, I should have been happy then. If you're constantly in this hedonic treadmill of focusing on the next thing and trying to attain something to tie to your happiness, you're always going to miss like how incredible the right now is, and you're never actually going to be happy because that goalpost just continues to shift. And so that's something that I realized when I was at my leanest. I had the body, I had apparently everything going for me, and I was freaking miserable because I wasn't focused on how I was feeling and grateful for what I had. And, you know, my happiness was tied to something that was trivial. Like, no one cares how much body fat I had, except for me, really. And I look at people now who compete, and I can't put my own story on top of everyone else's, but I don't know a single woman who has competed or done bodybuilding who's come out the other side and said, I was so healthy and I was so happy when I was competing. Nearly every single one that I know has come out and stopped competing and said they lost their periods, they were not happy, they had all of these hormonal issues going on. And so you never really know what is going on the inside. We only see what is going on the outside. And that's why comparison can be so, so detrimental to your happiness, is because it really is a highlight reel that you're comparing yourself to. And you see all of the ugliness and you see all of these issues going on in your life, and you see this amazing presentation of someone else's life, and you're comparing your deepest, darkest moments to this incredible moment of someone else's, and you forget that they're human as well. And so throughout my journey, I'm going on a massive tangent, but throughout my journey, I really made sure to delete certain people off social media so that my feed, subconsciously, all of the images that were coming in were healthy and positive, and the messages that I would was getting was in line with what I wanted my life to be like. And so I went on this massive unfollow spree, and it was so liberating, being like, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone. And so now anything, and it happens with the people in your life as well. And, you know, I'm not saying to like cut people out, but really take a look at the relationships with the people in your life and what they value and how they live their lives, because you start to take on those beliefs and you start to take on those sorts of values, and eventually your life kind of just changes and molds to become the people around you as well. So I make sure that the people in my life are positive and have similar values, so that we are aligned and there's not that that internal like friction of, oh, I don't really like that, and you know, they're very supportive, we're very supportive of each other. So that comparison can be really detrimental if you're comparing yourself to firstly something that you don't actually value, and not taking in the whole picture of that person.
I always love bringing values up, because I find it's a really interesting concept. And one of the problems I think we have in diet culture, and I'm going to include bodybuilding in that, is this value of, say, being shredded is kind of naturally put on us as something that we think that we should strive for, and that should be the life that we strive for. And often, like you said, because we're not taught how to sit down in primary school or intermediate and think, what's important to me? You know, say it's health, and then actually figuring out, well, what does health even mean? Does health mean abs? Does health mean this? Does it mean this? You know, like if perhaps we actually were sat down to figure out what even health means to us, that might have potentially prepared us for that social media world. But as how you got sucked in, you thought you were just getting into like fitness and training. Yes, partly for your body, but you deep down believed that it was for your health, didn't you?
Yeah.
But then next minute we're taken down a path, and I think both of us experienced getting to probably the least healthy times in our lives, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I was much younger than you were when I was, I think it was like 14 when I started losing my period. I got my period quite early. So I started losing my period, and we went to the doctor, and they said, if you don't put on weight, you're going to have osteoporosis by the time you're 26.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that was, I was quite lucky, I guess, that it hit me quite early. But yeah, bringing up this concept of comparison. And like you say, you don't know, you don't know what these girls are going through deep down. And I totally agree with you. I don't know one girl who went through bodybuilding who now has, who didn't end up having to go through a recovery kind of journey. It's almost predictable, right? It's like, yeah, as soon as you see the bodybuilding journey start, you'll follow them for like 6 months and you're like, any minute now. And then next minute they'll become like a body image coach or like a intuitive eating coach, and it's just so I hope that just reminds those girls watching, if you are following certain pages that are about getting that super lean or shredded or body image journeys, hopefully you can take Stacey and I's word for it that there's always something going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think it's important, some of the work that I do with my clients, all of my one-on-one clients, in one of our first sessions we will do a values session to actually understand what your values are, and not just health as a value. So health is a very broad spectrum value. Is health about vitality? Is it about energy? Is it about fitness? And actually really diving deep into what's important to you. How are you currently living your life? And is that in line with your values? So a lot of people who are living out of alignment, they won't know that they're living out of alignment. They'll just feel stuck, or they'll feel like they're in a bit of a rush, or they'll feel just really not like themselves. And when you actually look at what you find important and really important to you, not what you think should be important. So, you know, if success isn't important to you, or what does success look like to you, and what does health look like to you, it's really important to actually delve into that and then really take a look at your life and, okay, so how am I currently living? And if I was living in alignment with my values, what would that look like? Can be such a powerful, like even just asking yourself those simple questions and being really honest with yourself can really highlight where things need to change. So for me, health was really important. When I started this journey, I really looked at my values, and health was a very important value to me. But health meant having energy, you know, living a long, healthy life that I felt good in my body. Mm-hmm. And how I was currently living wasn't allowing me to do that. So I wasn't eating enough to give me energy. I didn't feel good in my body. And so therefore, I was living out of alignment with my values. And so anytime I wanted to restrict or diet or overexercise, it was just a simple reminder of, is this in line with your values? Yes or no. And that really dictated whether I went ahead and did something or I didn't. So I think values work, although not very directly linked to your body image, can actually help be like a guiding light for how you want to live your life and making the decisions that you want to make. And that was really pivotal for me. And that's why I take all of my clients through that, is because getting really clear on your values can really highlight changes that need to be made.
Yes, I 100% agree. And I feel like it should have been something that we were taught at for our nutrition degree, because we, you know, I did my background was as a nutritionist. And part of that is you get people to write down what their goals are. And then you just miss that whole step of, but the why, and is this actually going to align with you? And you just go, you know, how I was taught and what is kind of still what most nutritionists, I think, are actually probably still doing, because this is all like a new space. You know, you've got consulting and then you've got coaching, and they're actually quite different. But I think we need to have a coaching element in something like nutrition, because people are putting down their goals like weight loss or lose this much body fat, or I want to be able to eat, you know, clean meals Monday to Friday. And what we're taught to do is just be like, okay, cool, I'll help you do that, instead of actually breaking down and being like, let's just double check that this is going to actually make you happy in the end. Because if you don't understand, if it's not matching the life that you want, that's when you get a bit unstuck, eh?
Yeah, and I see that a lot with I see that a lot with clients that come to me if they're in a binge restrict cycle, is because they're always trying to diet. So they'll have this goal of weight loss, and so they'll go on this diet, and then by Thursday they'll be off the diet and they'll be like, fuck it, I'll just start it. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this. fuck it until Monday, and then they'll start again. And it's because they're not actually, like, they don't value weight loss. They value feeling fit, or they value feeling vitality or healthy, and so that diet is actually not aligned with their values in their lives, and they can't for the life of them figure out why they can't stick to anything, and they blame it to willpower, or then they get this like self-sabotage mindset. But actually it's because your goals aren't right, and because what you're trying to do to reach your goals aren't right. So if you actually change the word diet and actually start to focus on what gives you energy, you're more likely to stick to something, and you're allowed to have those foods that you cut out, and you're allowed to have literally anything that you want, as long as it makes you feel good. And sometimes feel good might be a salad or vegetables, and sometimes it might be chocolate. So actually getting, I love that you're asking, you know, why do you have this goal? Because that is so important to anyone on any health journey, or, you know, focusing on anything in their life, is actually understanding the why. Because if the why is misaligned with your values, or it's not, you don't really understand what the why is, it's, you're going to set yourself up for failure. Because when it gets tough, or when it gets a little bit, you know, you struggle a little bit, if you don't have that why, it's really easy to stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's why a lot of women, like you say, they get to the point where they're so confused, because they're like, but I think I really want this, like say weight loss, I really want to stop the binging, but they don't know why they keep falling back into it. And you're like, this isn't helping me. Like, I'm not feeling good. Why am I still doing things that I feel like aren't helping me? And like you say, it's because we haven't figured out the how to get them what they're actually wanting. Yeah, it's super common, isn't it? For those people listening, both Stacey and I like work with women who have issues with binge eating, you know, overeating, like emotional eating. Like one of the challenges with, I think, women is we don't always talk about these challenges, right? We can often internalize them. I'm curious to actually dive into a bit of your binge eating phase. So did that come after bodybuilding, did it? Or was it during bodybuilding? When did you start like binge eating? So for those listening, eating well past your fullness cues in a real like self-sabotaging way.
So definitely not during bodybuilding, because I was so strict on my diet. I didn't have anything off diet. I'd have cheat meals where, you know, I'd have a meal off, but it wasn't necessarily a binge. My first actual binge was after my last bodybuilding competition. I had about two friends make me really big brownies. Mm-hmm. And I remember on the way back from picking them up the next day, I had one in the car, and it was just like this drug. I just could not stop. And so I had, it was like two full brownies after not eating anything, sugar or flour or anything, for like 6 months. And I just totally binged on these brownies. I actually had to go into fetal position on my bed because my stomach was so sore. And I didn't stay in that binge cycle for very long. It wasn't like I had, you know, a binge eating disorder. I had a few binges, and, you know, that feeling of not being able to stop. It was like something took over my body, and I had this taste of brownie or sugar, or my body was just like, give me more. And I couldn't stop. And so that happened probably for about a month after my last bodybuilding competition, probably because my body actually needed the calories, and it needed to get some of these nutrients and some of these things back into my body to actually have the energy. And then after about a month, it fizzled out a little bit, because I'd allowed myself to eat literally anything that I wanted. And then that's when I started to really focus on my body image and food journey.
Awesome. Cause that was actually the other thing I was going to ask is, you know, how do you transition from that real strict way of eating to then eating intuitively? I know I had a bit of a challenge making that adaptation, because you go from like trusting like this specific meal plan, which tells you when to eat. And it's not about, am I hungry? Am I not hungry? Am I full? It's like, you have this meal because it's mealtime, and you have this much that's on your plan. Did you find it was a bit challenging initially going from meal plan to say eating a bit more intuitively?
Yes. So I didn't go straight from meal plan to intuitive eating. Because you turn off your body's signals and you learn to not listen to them. So anyone that has been dieting, restrictive, following meal plans, or looking for things like external cues, like time to tell you when to eat, your body is, you know, you're not going to be able to actually listen into your body's cues. So that comes over time. how I made the transition was I used that same logic, I guess, to actually bring in other foods into my diet. So it started off with scones. I really love scones. And so every morning when I was working with my endocrinologist, she said, have one thing off plan. So the first few weeks, it started with one thing that was off plan. And then I had my mum cook me food and I wasn't allowed to ask what was in it. She wasn't allowed to make any amendments. So she'd usually make changes to fit with my diet. I wasn't allowed to do anything. I had to eat what was in front of me without any questions. And so it was this really phased approach. It wasn't like complete restriction or meal plan to just eat whatever you want. It was really quite still quite structured. I'm quite a structured person. And so I brought that structure into, sounds kind of counterintuitive, but I brought that structure into bringing that intuition back. So slowly starting with one or two meals, and then I'd bring that out to three or four meals. And then I'd actually start to change the times that I would be eating. So instead of like eating at 11 o'clock, I'd be like, okay, well, it's 11:15, so I'll eat now. So, and also asking myself, what do I feel like eating? Because now nothing was off limits. I could literally have whatever I wanted. And so there was a period of actually tuning in and saying, well, what do I feel like? Do I want something sweet or savory? Do I want something like hard or soft, crunchy or whatever? And so I'd go through like this little checklist and kind of get down to what I felt like eating. And sometimes that would be really scary. Sometimes it would be something that I wasn't allowed before. And then sometimes it would be exactly what I'd been having because that's what my body was craving. So it was still this like phased approach. And honestly, it's probably only in the past 12 months that I feel the most in tune that I've ever felt with my body. I can have this huge meal in front of me and have three bites left and be like, no, I'm done. I don't need those three bites. If I'm hungry, even after I've just eaten, I'll allow myself to go eat because my body is telling me it needs more and there's not that judgment attached to it. I think it's really easy to attach judgment to what we're eating or our hunger levels because we say, oh, I shouldn't be hungry. I just ate, but I might have exercised a lot more than the day before and therefore my body needs a little bit more fuel to recover. Mm-hmm. So it's really only been in the past 12 to 18 months that I've felt this in tune with my body that I can actually really stop when I'm full and feel into those hunger and fullness signals and what I feel like and actually allow myself to have it without judgment.
So I really love how you brought up the concept that when you've been so strict, and I hope people are listening, especially if they are trying to move away from say real strict calorie counting or a meal plan, it's not as simple as like a nutritionist or a non-diet nutrition just saying to you, okay, you just need to eat. You just need to eat intuitively. And we're not going to tell you what to eat. We just want you to wake up in the morning and we just want you to have what you feel like and trust that your body will naturally go for, you know, for a nice balance of food. That's just so overwhelming and so scary, right? And it sounds like a gentle approach and a gradual approach like really worked for you. And I know that for a lot of women, girls that I've worked with, that's sort of gentle approach that I do as well. But I just hope that girls who say have tried to go from real strict to just intuitive eating and then felt worse or felt out of control, I hope that can give you girls listening maybe some compassion, because there's so much going on, right? Especially if you're undernourished, you will naturally want to overeat and probably just grab like high density foods. So thanks for sharing that. Like I said, it's quite a like controversial space in the nutrition space in terms of how to navigate somebody going from disordered eating, like bodybuilding type restrictive, to intuitive eating again.
Yeah, I say this with a lot of people as well, is there will be a period of, like you said, where you will want that dense food that fills you up, that calorie, you know, has more calories because your body is craving that and probably needs that, but it doesn't last. And if you do go through that period of like, oh my gosh, I'm craving all these sugary foods, or I'm craving these foods that actually don't make me feel great, that will eventually even out because you start to realize, and something that was really pivotal in my mindset was when I was eating these foods, it wasn't like I'm not allowed to have this again, so I'm going to eat all I can now. there was this mindset shift where it was like, this isn't the last time I'm going to eat. I'm allowed to eat again in 2 hours if I want more, and I'm allowed to have this again tomorrow. And so actually understanding that and being like, okay, I can eat now and I can eat later. And so that means that I can have a little bit now and I don't have to binge on it or overconsume it now because I'm not trying to get it all in now while I'm allowed it. That really helped me. So there will probably be this period where you are transitioning and you're allowing yourself to have these certain foods where you crave it more, but that doesn't last. And it, you know, it might last a month, it might last 2 months, it might last 2 weeks. That time period is different for everyone. But the more that you allow yourself these foods and the more that you start to train your body that it, and your mind that you can have it when you want it, the easier it becomes to say yes or no when it's there. And sometimes you will say no, and it's not saying no because you're worried about what it's going to do to your body shape or putting on weight, because you're actually like, oh, I actually don't feel like it right now. And so that's something that is quite amazing that happens with my clients, is that they can go from, you know, binging to actually saying, oh no, I don't actually feel like that food right now. Maybe I'll have it later. And that can be really empowering for people to transition to as well.
Yes, absolutely. I like what you've said, how something that really helped you, and I know it helps a lot of the girls that I've worked with as well, is just simply saying, I can have this later if I want. It's removing the restriction, adding in that permission. I know that's a really, really effective tool. Yeah. What else can I say? Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for sharing like your overall experience. Honestly, for those girls listening, I feel like Stacey's like your classic like role model in terms of the tools and the strategies that she has, you know, that she has used to get to this place of, I'm going to say like food freedom. Would that be almost how you feel now?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. That self-awareness, the permission, listening to your body, asking all the right questions, right? So when you look at food, you're thinking, how is this going to actually make me feel? Do I even want this food? All those helpful questions are so much better than saying, am I allowed? Should I have this? What's this going to do to my body? It's all coming from this place of, it sounds like these days you really operate from this place of self-care and what's going to feel like care.
Yeah, and that changes day to day. So, you know, sometimes self-care is forcing myself when I don't feel like it to go for a run or to go to the gym because I know it's going to feel better. And sometimes it is, you know, resting and having some more chocolate or having something that I usually wouldn't be used to not be allowed to have. And so self-care changes. And I think, you know, it can be quite overwhelming because there's so many things that to learn about yourself and to relearn about your body. But one day self-care looks totally different to the next. And the same happens with my food and exercise. You know, I still love going to the gym and I love pushing myself at the gym, but it's no longer from a place of, I have to do this. It's from a place of, I get to do this and I love this. And some days I don't love it and some days I won't do it. But, you know, self-care changes with every single day, every month, and being able to also do that with compassion and with non-judgment, because sometimes that judgment comes in of like, oh, I should be going to the gym or I shouldn't be resting because I rested yesterday, and actually allowing yourself to like, whatever comes out, whatever your body needs is okay. And yeah, being able to listen to that is also really empowering and quite a really fun way to live your life, because now there's no rules and there's no like strict things that you need to live between. And so sometimes it means that I'll miss a session and go and see my friends. And then, you know, it's just a way, it's a lifestyle. It's not now, it doesn't dictate my life, but it fits in with my life.
Yeah, because that's not the only part of your life, is it anymore?
Exactly.
It's not just about food and how you look. You've got this big full life that, you know, of, you know, like friends and socializing and it's looking at your whole life holistically. And that is exactly where I think we both want all women to get to, is just living a happy life, creating their own definition of what that healthy balance like looks like, because like you say, it's different for everybody and it differs day to day. And that's just so inspiring to see how you can go from a place of living in such living so out of alignment to now living from that place of alignment. So that's just such a, yeah, I love it. Such a beautiful story, Stace. So cool. Okay, so I'd like to finish these chats off. Well, I'm actually going to start doing this. Asking what are some of the things that you're still working on? So like daily challenges. I like to remind clients that self-development work isn't something that we just necessarily tick off and that's done. And I know you advocate for this as well. So it could be related to your relationship with food and body image. Ideally, but it could be something else. But in terms of your journey and like the day-to-day potential challenges that come up, well, what would be some of the things that you feel like you're still having to do a bit of work on yourself on?
So I've mentioned surrender quite a few times, and that is because it has been a real big focus point for me in the past probably 6 months to actually not have to control every situation, whether that be around knowing what happens in a relationship or knowing what happens in my career, is actually learning to trust. I'm quite spiritual and so, you know, learning to trust the universe or trust that I'm on the right path and I don't need to know the outcome. So that is something that I have to consciously work out every single day. And I do that by working on my mindset and not, you know, not always getting 2 steps ahead or 10 steps ahead, and also allowing myself space. So I'm very, I like to do things a lot and I'm very active and I like to always be, you know, working on a different project. And so actually allowing myself space to like read a novel or to actually just be and not have to do anything allows me to feel surrendered. So that's probably the main thing that I'm working on, is trust and just allowing myself to slow down and be.
Okay, awesome. I love that. And I feel like girls who are struggling with their relationship with food or their body can apply that. I think you haven't linked that to anything overly specific. You said kind of a little bit around maybe relationships and business, but it can be related to any situation, right? If you're not feeling like you're quite where you want to be or you're worried about the future, would you agree? Like anybody could, that strategy could apply to somebody who is dealing with their relationship with food and body image, do you feel?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we are so focused on how we look and food that we are always in the future, we are always stressing about certain things that we can't control. And so actually allowing yourself, and this is how I've also gotten really in tune with my intuition and my body, is allowing myself space and time to just be with myself. And so that is really important when you're going through disordered eating or you're trying to, improve your body image and relationship with food, is allowing yourself space. So you're actually bringing down your nervous system and calming yourself down, because it's really easy to get caught up in your head of, I should be doing this, I should look like that, I should be exercising, I shouldn't eat this. So allowing yourself to like trust and just have that space can help you tune into your body and your intuition, and makes you just less stressed overall, which can really impact the way that you show up in multiple areas of your life.
And stop overthinking, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's something that a lot of women will say is it's actually something that comes up on the goals sheet really often, that one of the biggest pain points is the overthinking. Constantly overthinking food choices and overthinking their body. And I think this, when you're in one of those states where it's just going crazy and you it's just got all the stuff going on in your head, using your strategy, like you say, just surrender, taking a deep breath, can be something we can add to our toolkits. I know I can definitely add that one to mine as well.
Yeah, I used to have a post-it note on my computer that said breathing exercises. So whenever I saw that, if I was like writing an email, I'd focused on breathing. And it can be just as simple as, 5 deep breaths can just like bring your nervous system down. So it doesn't have to be like these grandiose gestures or things that you go away and meditate. It can literally be just focusing on deep belly breathing, because it's so easy to just breathe shallow and then you kind of get in your head. So just bring it back and dropping out of your head back into your body can be as simple as like 5 deep breaths.
Yeah, amazing, achievable, something all of us can do. Awesome. Okay, all right, thanks Stace. We're gonna wrap it up there. Absolutely love that chat. It was so much wisdom. It was such an inspiring story, and I know that girls in multiple stages of their journey will have gotten something out of listening to this chat. So Thank you very much. Awesome.
And thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're most welcome. And your Instagram handle is it Heart Space? Is that right?
Heart Space with Stacey. Yep.
Heart Space with Stacey. Yep. So yep. You guys want to follow Stacey for body positive, nice, inspiring content. That's where you can find her.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much. It's been so good to chat. And yeah, I could talk about this topic all day, every day. So
I know.
Sorry, I've rambled a little bit.
I know. I was like, we're already at an hour, so we probably should. Awesome. All right, everybody, thanks for watching, and we'll see you all next week.